We're all children of a special treat, a miracle of nature that we just call wheat. A crop that's in the Bible, a crop that's in our bread, a crop that's filled our bellies and held us in good stead. Through a history of starvation and times of want and woe, wheat has been our savior, our grub, our goulash dough. There's always lots of problems when we have enough to eat, but there's only one dilemma when there's not enough wheat. We feed you.
Well, here we are at episode 2. Let's call it The Oracle Speaks. It's all about Vince Peterson's 2 presentations at the Tri-State Wheat Convention in Coeur d'Alene in mid-November, where, among other things, the U.S. Wheat Associates Vice President of Overseas Operations handicapped the wheat market, our number one competitor, and why there are reasons for optimism. Not long before Peterson got to Coeur d'Alene, news broke that the U.S. Wheat Associates Board of Directors had selected him to lead the organization upon the retirement of Alan Tracy next July. I've known Peterson for more than a dozen years, and I'm a fan of the U.S. Wheat Associates board decision. Tracy and Peterson are different men with different styles, but each are leaders. Thinking of World War II generals, Tracy is more a Douglas MacArthur figure, a little aloof, but a brilliant strategist, while Peterson reminds me of Omar Bradley, a soldier's general who led from the ground. Peterson is also the only person I've run across in the wheat industry, or anywhere for that matter, who can make sitting through a PowerPoint presentation an enjoyable experience. His creative mind helps him to see the grain market in ways that are as illuminating as they are engaging. Ask yourself how many people would use different breeds of dogs to illustrate the kind of exporter the U.S. should aspire to. As he talks, you'll hear Peterson refer to his PowerPoint slides. Many of these have been posted to Facebook, and we're embedding a few in the podcast, but promise not to look at your phone while you drive. Peterson talked a lot on a variety of wheat-based subjects, but it was what he said toward the very end of his second talk that was, I felt, what his listeners most wish to hear. It's basically about having optimism as we grind through these market lows. But I'll let him tell it, after which I'll go back and catch up.
When I start to look at potentials, and I look at that chart, I look and see where we are with profitability or lack of profitability in the ag sector. We have a wheat planting situation where we're going to have definitely less acres in the winter wheat in the U.S. We're going to have less acreage probably in Russia. Europe is going to have a smaller crop this next year. We're going to have to watch weather patterns, quality issues. You know, there are just a lot of reasons that I can name, much more than I can name a reason that that's going to go lower than there, to think that that perhaps might be approaching somewhat of a bottom range. And I certainly hope that's true, that we're going to be at that point. So I'm optimistic going forward. It's not that tomorrow we're going to all wake up and the price is going to be back up higher. Well, maybe Donald Trump will do it for us. I don't know. But I have some optimism both on the trade side, the volume side, and just where we are in the world total trade, that I think we maybe are at a point where the turn is in sight someplace.
With Peterson's words still ringing in our ears that a turn in the market might be within sight, let's back up to his morning presentation. He explained that while wheat prices are bad, U.S. wheat, particularly soft white wheat, is finding premiums in the market.
Now, this is a horrible year to come and say we're talking about premium prices. And we've got wheat futures at $4 and feed wheat at $2.50. And, you know, this is a horrible year for wheat prices. But it's a lot worse other places. So we just look at some comparisons. We'll give this a click to the next. And then this will probably be maybe hard for you to see. But the graph on the left side, left two-thirds of the screen, is from the International Grains Council publication. So it gives some comparative international wheat FOB prices. The top of the line is U.S. hard red spring 14 protein. It's simply the graph from October 2015 to I think the end of last month. Soft white wheat is not plotted by them, but I put the current price on there just to kind of give you a sense of where it is. It has U.S. hard red winter wheat on that graph. Soft red winter wheat, you can see the highlights off the margin. Also has French wheat on that. What they call Black Sea milling wheat, which is predominantly Russian winter wheat with about at 11 protein-ish kind of range, and then Black Sea feed wheat at the bottom of that. And so you kind of get a sense for the price differentials of U.S. wheats, various classes, over Russian milling wheat. So I use that just as a benchmark for some comparisons. If you look at our hard red spring wheat, we're $70 a ton just on that the current prices, and it would frankly exceeded that at some points during the year over Russian wheat. Soft white wheat, hard red winter wheat, $16, $17 per ton, 50 cents a bushel over Russian wheat on an FOB basis. And even soft red winter wheat, which used to compete in the Middle East, in Egypt, with that Russian wheat, no longer is doing that. That is carrying a premium of now $7 today over Russian wheat because it's being sold other places. It's being sold into Mexico, being sold into Central America, South America, primarily for the biscuit, cookie, cracker industry. Let's go to the next one. I want to even boil this down a little bit, something more that affects you directly here in the PNW. So I took the most recent Taiwan Flour Millers Association wheat tender results. So again, the left side of this, so this was just about 2 weeks ago, TFMA, it's the Taiwan Flour Millers Association, had a tender, public tender, bought two cargoes of wheat. And when they do that, they buy a grocery ship, what we call several classes of wheat aboard the same vessel. So in the first vessel, they bought a combination cargo of 14.5 protein spring wheat, 12.5 protein hard red winter wheat, and 9% maximum soft white wheat. Well, if you remember the last year, that was quite an issue trying to come up with a maximum protein in soft white wheat. But look at the incremental values for these wheats. The second cargo had just spring wheat and winter wheat combined on it. If you look at the incremental values, I mean, we had hard red spring wheat trading at approximately $80 a ton over Russian wheat. This is just 2 weeks ago. Hard red winter wheat approximately $40 over Russian wheat, and the soft wheats was approaching $30 over Russian wheat. So while you may not feel that additional money in your pocket compared to what the Russian farmer is selling theirs for, or in fact the Canadian farmer in many cases with the spring wheat this year, or the Argentine farmer, we're getting some pretty good premiums in the marketplace.
Peterson conceded that in the last 3 years, the U.S. has gone from being the world's largest volume supplier to, in his words, no longer being the top dog. But he asked, if we're not the top dog, what kind of dog do we want to be?
If we're going to use that analogy, what kind of dog do we really want to be in this fight? Let's see if this works. Do we want to be a Russian shepherd, you know, very big lumbering out in the frozen tundra kind of a dog who happens to be the largest exporter this year? That's one possibility. Or we want to be maybe the Australian shepherd that is sort of aimlessly chasing sheep around a field that doesn't know exactly where he needs to have them, but he knows he needs to chase them someplace. Or maybe we want to be the French bulldog that has really nothing more to talk about than our French baguette around the world, yet they do have a lot of wheat to export. So those are some options. Let's do maybe a double click. Maybe we want to be this dog, the dog that's out in front of the race, the fastest dog in the pack. Let's hit it one more time. We want to be the best in show, frankly. If we're not going to be the largest and the biggest volume, this is the attitude in terms of the dog world that we want to be. We want to be the ones with the trophies. Trophies for what exactly is the good question. Frankly, it's a matter of value and profitability for farmers, and that's the ultimate mission of U.S. Wheat. If we look at our mission statement, it says to enhance the profitability of wheat producers and our customers overseas, and they really do go hand in hand. Without a profitability in our customers' side, they're not going to pay the money we need to get the money moving back to our side.
In his afternoon presentation, Peterson talked about Russia, but not as a newcomer with unnecessary wheat added to world supply. Instead of being a nasty newcomer, Peterson said Russia is now an important part of the world wheat matrix.
I wanted just to make a couple of comments about Russia, because competition came up in the subject with the panel. So what I'm going to show you, Russia is certainly a pivotal point anymore. It's a the market has grown so much, it's a necessary supply in the world matrix anymore. Whether we like it or not, with or without Russia, makes a big difference in what the market scenario is. And that Middle East market, Egypt and North Africa, East Africa, that pulls that Russian wheat, depends on it. So when it's there in big numbers, it's heavy on the market. And when it's not, then things get really interesting. So what I've tried to show you is that if you look back through Russian weather patterns, they are in a very sensitive climatic zone. They're kind of in a continental climate. They've got relatively low moisture rates in most of the wheat-producing areas, with a small exception in the south. And they are they're subject to fairly regular drought patterns through that area. The arrows represent the years that Russia has have had droughts. In the last 50 years, there have been 13 measurable significant droughts in Russia. 10 of those 13 have been in years when we are drawing down world stocks in big ways. And I'd make point out in that particular one, all of those that have come since the dissolution of the Soviet Union, in other words, since the emergence of Russia as a major wheat producer and an exporter, have come in the deficit side of that picture. Every time that happens, we have price spikes in wheat when the Russians are out there. So just on going back to pulling the lever and our how are we going to do on another year, the Russians now were 4 years without a drought, and they normally have about three every 10 years. That's not a very good meteorological prediction to say it's going to get worse, but I think they're running low on their good luck probably. So we're going to watch that very carefully this next year on how the weather patterns move and if they can continue to have a fifth consecutive good year or not. That'll make a big difference.
So how did the wheat market get into this cycle of low prices? It's not rocket science, Peterson said.
Frankly, we just have too much wheat in the world to deal with right now. So if you look at this chart, it's the most basic thing you can put together, and particularly these last 4 years where you're looking at the bar is the world production of wheat in the world, and the line running across that is the consumption of wheat in the world. And for 4 years running now, we've made new records in both of those things, but continually the production is still outpacing the consumption rates on it. And so that's been a pretty difficult one to deal with. But I want to just pause on this slide for a second, because look at that growth, and it kind of almost doesn't show in the dynamics it showed in that graph. But if you go back to, I think, 2006 is the earliest year on that, but there's almost a direct mathematical number correlation to population growth, consumption, and this graph. So, for example, back in 2006, we were producing and consuming around 625, 640 million tons of wheat, with a world population of a little more than 6 billion. So there's almost a direct correlation there, 6 billion people consuming 600 million tons of wheat. Out here today, we've got 7.5 billion people consuming about 750 million tons of wheat. So that linear direction is still going up. Project that out 20 or 25 years, we're going to have 9.5 billion people in that neighborhood. That means 950 million tons of wheat going to be consumed and need to be produced. So there's the dynamics of that graph looking forward, and for people looking out 20 years from now, is pretty optimistic, I think. I mean, in other words, we've got to produce and trade enough to make up for that gap. So even though this looks pretty nasty in the last 4 years, I think looking forward, there's some really good optimism in that. But I kind of want to look at these 4 years and see, where we are in terms of price, because there's some story to be told, I think. Let's go to the next graph. What I've tried to do is take this around, and I hate to say this, almost goes back as long as I've been in the grain business. Not quite, but and I've tried to look at it in a little bit different way. I've put it on a timeline, and the years that we've had years where we've produced more than we consumed, you see the surplus in the blue, and the years that we've consumed more than we've produced, we see it kind of in the gold below, the deficit. So a deficit surplus year by year. So I think you're just going to click off a few of these. Give me about four of those. Okay, stop right there. So if we look back in time, and I know you can hardly see these years, but the first 4 years we're at right now, the 4 years of surplus stock building each successive year, We've had that same pattern before. You go back to the 1990s, you see a pattern of about 4 years. You go back into the mid-80s, actually, hate to say, there were six consecutive years of stock building years back in the early 80s and then back into the 70s when we had, if you, for those of you young enough, read about the Russian grain business and all that kind of stuff. We had that sort of thing back in the 70s. But so this is not new. It's a pattern we've seen before, and we've seen the same price pattern before. So give me about two more of those, one more. Okay, so that's the, hard to see a little bit, but that's the futures chart, Kansas City futures chart, by the same timeline of those of that those years periods, and you can see the same pattern in three successive cycles where we've had year after year of stock building and price movements downwards. We're 4 years now into a price downtrend. So there we are. We put together, our market analyst every week puts together a compilation of the export sales, and I wanted to put this on just to highlight a couple of things, because almost every region we have is ahead of last year. So we've got the Central America region, we're about 500,000 tons ahead of last year in terms of total sales. Hit that once and I think you'll get a highlight on that. Guatemala, that's a really good case study, because U.S. Wheat and the PNW commissions have put a lot of marketing emphasis into white wheat in many different countries. You'll see Guatemala about 75,000 tons of soft white sales to date, and that's largely with the work with one major company, the largest miller in Guatemala. We spent a lot of time with them. They are just a great company to work with. Not only, but the thing you see at other places, not only do they buy for Guatemala, they've got mills in about a half a dozen different countries in Central America. And so they now have almost a regular rotation of vessels coming from the PNW, from Portland, down the West Coast and discharging to Guatemala. So spring, winter, they've just got a regular rotation of things going on. So it's been a really good customer, and I think a success story on the part of the collective group in cultivating that one.
Did you hear Peterson say, on the part of the collective group cultivating that one? He's referring to the partnership among the three Pacific Northwest states and U.S. Wheat Associates to expand markets into Latin America by demonstrating soft white wheat's blending opportunities, as well as its excellent performance as a solo performer. Although wheat prices are not where anyone wants to see them, Peterson, if you haven't caught on yet, is a man who sees silver linings. That would include this marketing year's exports, which are up considerably over last year's.
Where we are this year in exports, and there are some good stories to be told. You know, last year was a horrible year where we hit the lowest total wheat exports we've had in about 30 years. It was kind of a depressing year for all of us in terms of price and those of us that are trying to enhance exports. So there's a series of graphs, and this will be a little hard to read, but each graph, there is a red line with kind of red bold boxes. That's the current year to date that we're in. So we've got a number of things. So here's total wheat export commitments. And the red bar is kind of in the middle of that, but if you can pick that apart with your eye, you'll see that we're at about the second highest in the last 6 years in pace to date. So this is to date as of about the first of November, I think, in terms of export sales. That puts it on a trajectory to perhaps surpass USDA's 27 million ton projection for the entire year. So we're on a pretty healthy path, particularly compared to last year, which is that lowest line, that blue line on the bottom, which was the pace of during the last year. So we're off to a little bit better start. Northern Central America market, this is the best year we've had for a start in the last 6 years, and that's everything from Mexico down all through Central America. So we're off to a really good start there. The next one, I think, is the Philippines. Philippines, again, we're at a record pace in the Philippines right now. Joe Soares, who spoke at the meeting last year, is just delightedly beside himself, and you can imagine Joe's excited anyway, but he's really excited this year. I think we have something like about a 95% market share. Total white wheat commitments, we have to say, are sort of vanilla this year. We're right in the middle of the pack. We've got some good spots and some spots that we've been a little bit behind on. Let's go to the next one on that one. I think you almost put it on one page, and you can see a little bit how we're doing in the top 10 markets compared to last year. So the darker green bars on that are the current year to date. The blue bars are last year's to date. So almost in all of them, with exception of Nigeria, you know, we're doing better this year than the previous year. And particularly those early ones, the Philippines, Mexico, ones that are right in our gut slot of our target target marketing are really good to see them far away and ahead. And I always like, I kind of like this graph, because not only is it at the top 10 markets, but U.S. Wheat operates 7 offices in those top 10 countries that are there. So we've got, and then we cover the others from regional offices. So we've got very good coverage in those markets and others as well.
It's true, prices don't look good in the wheat market today, but you can hear the optimism in Peterson's voice as he talks about the future. More people on the planet will mean more demand for our favorite crop, which will result in higher prices, especially when the Black Sea area suffers weather calamities, which they do about every 4 years out of 10. All right, once again, we've reached the end of another edition of Wheat All About It. This once-a-week podcast series can be found on iTunes under Wheat All About It, and also by visiting the Washington Grain Commission website. And don't forget to visit the Wheat All About It Facebook page at, that's right, Wheat All About It. Post your questions, accolades, and discouraging words there. And remember, every time you teach someone to download this podcast, an angel gets its wings. Until next time, I'm Scott Yates, hoping you'll tune in again.
We're all children of a special treat. A miracle of nature that we just call wheat. A crop that's in the Bible, a crop that's in our bread. A crop that's filled our bellies and held us in good stead. Through a history of starvation and times of want and woe, a wheat has been our savior, our grub, our gruel, our dough. There's always lots of problems when we have enough to eat. But there's only one dilemma when there's not enough wheat. We feed you.